We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Now let me welcome everybody to the Wild Wild West. The Badgers are in the Rose Bowl like Elliot Ness.
We really doing this?
Come on. doesn't that song instantly take you back to some moment of your life?
Whenever I hear that song, honestly, I think of being on the practice field in LA for the Rose Bowl. So
That's the soundtrack to the team's practice.
I'm guessing it was probably also the soundtrack in 98, 99, too. I don't know. Maybe we were just recycling the same CD when we went back there in 2010, but that is exactly where that song takes me.
Odds are that that's the first song played at the first practice this year at the Rose Bowl.
I think we'll just make it happen.
Oh, you have some pull in that?
We'll just make it happen. I think it needs to. Yeah.
Okay, well, this is Behind the Badgers. I'm Patrick Herb. With me is Brian Mason, and we are fired up because the Badgers are going back to Cali to play in the Rose Bowl. We're going to try and get as many pop culture hip-hop references as we can.
We're doing great
in the first minute and a half of this podcast. Thanks for checking out our podcast. Thanks for listening. Go ahead and rate us, review, subscribe, all those things. It really helps us, and we'd love to hear from your feedback, too. Get us on Twitter, behindthebadgers@gmail.com is our email address if you want to get at us. We have a lot to talk about today. We're going to uncover and unpack a big weekend in Wisconsin sports, in a variety of sports, and look ahead to a big weekend and a rosy forecast that is in front of us. Our guest today has a huge weekend before him. We talked to Kelly Sheffield. He's the head coach of Wisconsin's volleyball team, who will host the regional championship at the Fieldhouse this weekend on Friday and hopefully again on Saturday with a trip to, they don't call it the Final Four in volleyball, but it's the national semifinal. It's essentially the Final Four. So they have two games to go, both home games. If they can win them, they go back to the Final Four. So we got a preview of it from Kelly Sheffield. And had an awesome conversation with him.
It was pretty fascinating. I mean, between his odyssey in Europe and kind of taking off for 3 months and falling off the grid, fascinating story. And then his history and how his unlikely path to becoming a college volleyball coach was pretty amazing. And I was interested to hear what he would be doing now if he was not coaching volleyball.
Yes, it was surprising to me to hear.
An important career, but surprising.
It's a noble career. If you don't follow Wisconsin volleyball, now's your chance to start because they are awesome this year and they're one of the best teams in the country and they've got a coach who's got a really compelling story. So stick around and listen to that. Give it a chance. I think you're going to really like what you hear from Kelly Sheffield. But let's dive right into the trending topics. Trending topic number one is two-part. It's football and it's going back to Cali. But before we do that, let's look back a little bit at the Big Ten Championship game where Wisconsin, boy, it's a tale of two halves, clearly. For 30 minutes, That was as good as Wisconsin has played all season, and had a 14-point lead on number one Ohio State at the half, and then kind of ran out of gas in the second half. I think the takeaway for me overall was a positive. I don't like moral victories, and you know the team doesn't like moral victories, but Wisconsin had some sort of redemption for the first time they played Ohio State. They certainly looked better than the first time they played them. They opened a lot of eyes, I think, on the national stage, and that's part of the reason probably that they got the Rose Bowl invitation and didn't move down the rankings despite losing the game.
From the team perspective, you went from the first matchup in Columbus and the Badgers walking away feeling like they had played very poorly against a good team, nonetheless, but had not played a good game. In Indianapolis, the takeaway was, okay, we put it out there. We gave him a good shot. And Tale of Two Halves is exactly right. It's hard to walk away feeling good about a game where you give up 27 unanswered points in the second half and go scoreless. But for 30 minutes, that was...
For 30 minutes, you were the better team.
That was what this team is capable of doing, and it was great. A great plan, creative game plan, well executed, guys making plays on both sides of the ball, and really capitalizing on a chance to make a statement on a big stage. It just, you couldn't sustain it after halftime. And Ohio State, once the momentum got going back in the Buckeyes' favor, especially in that building that was full of Ohio State fans,
that was
tough sledding for Wisconsin.
Yeah, and okay, so you mentioned the creative game plan. I want to go there for a little bit because that was exciting and encouraging to see and fun that, okay, right from the first snap, Wisconsin's first offensive possession, it was not going to be a Jonathan Taylor up the middle. There was a talk going into the week about breaking tendencies and probably needing to diversify a little bit and come out swinging, that you couldn't necessarily beat this team by being conservative. And so the first pass was a deep pass to Cephas, and they featured him a lot, which was
understandably
for sure. The last 2 weeks he's been outstanding. But you saw that there, the O-line got some redemption, I think, from their first game against Ohio State when they couldn't corral Chase Young and Cone had no time to throw. They did a couple things probably schematically to help that, getting the ball out of his hand quickly, but also they held up a lot better. Can we say they neutralized Chase Young?
As much as any team can.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, that was a big exclamation point on the first half for me, was that Chase Young was not much of a factor when he was the factor in the first meeting. I think the O-line walked away feeling like it played well. It held up very well against an extremely talented front. And as much as it wasn't we're just going to run Jonathan Taylor up the middle, as you said, which is a oversimplification, of course. But they were able to. They were able to get some push and get Jonathan running north and south, which is something we talked about on our pod last week about needing to happen. You were able to get him going, and you were able to protect Jack Cohn. I mean, Jack had time to throw, and that was the big difference between the two meetings and a huge reason why that offense was able to move the ball and score.
Yeah, Cohn was sacked just 2 times in the game. I thought it was a little bit of validation for Jonathan Taylor, too. He's put up these gaudy numbers all his career and record-setting and amazing accomplishments and everything he's done.
But...
Sure, there was a little bit of a national, maybe, narrative that, well, can he do it against Ohio State?
And he did.
In his first 2 times against Ohio State, he was held under 100 yards and wasn't the factor that he is in almost every other game. Well, he was, and he was right from the first possession, again on another huge run right before halftime. So I felt good for him that he belonged on that field with that team, and he proved it.
And I think if you go to the other side of the ball, you can look at the defense had played well in the first meeting in the first half. You saw that again in Indianapolis. The defense was up to the challenge.
Wouldn't you have liked to see an Oren Burks getting play that's
what I was
half.
Gonna say, getting shorthanded there with the injuries to Noah Burks and to Chris, especially Chris Orr, because we know what he means beyond just what he does on the field to this team.
Those
were big hits.
Yeah, but he also the leadership is you're right. But it also they were not able to get the same pressure on Fields in that second half.
It was different.
Kind of all over the map here, but I want to go back to another thing about offensive scheme and creativity here. So how patient do you have to be as a coaching staff to hold that Jack Cohn option read keeper touchdown? I'm serious. So they run that, and Cohn scores on, was a 17-yard keeper. And that play, they've probably been thinking about that play all season long and holding it for the right moment. And so they held it until the Big Ten Championship game. I'm just saying, like, the patience that you have to have as a coach to be like, okay, we got this play. It's going to work whenever we want to use it, because they're going to, everybody's, the defense is going to flow to Jonathan Taylor, and rightfully so. Yep. And it's going to pop wide open for Cohn. And so they held it to week 13 of the season, and boom. I mean, that, I think that speaks to the creativity and the offensive game planning that Chris and Rudolph can do together when they have, this was a second time against an opponent in the same season, which is a real rarity in college football. And they put together a plan that deserves credit, especially that first half, how they played. And I was in the locker room at halftime, Wisconsin's locker room, and it was heartbreaking to see Chris Orr know he wasn't going to be able to go back and play. He had that head injury in the first half, and so he had his pads off, and he's in the locker room. But he was as fiery and emotional as ever, imploring his teammates to finish this game, do it for him, play hard, get this Big Ten championship, leave their legacy, all of those things. He was the one. He was setting the tone in the locker room. He was the loudest voice, as he often is. But even though there's a guy who knows he can't play in the second half, he got his pads off, he was the guy delivering the message, and he was the one talking the loudest in the halftime. And it was bittersweet for me. Like, it was great to see. It was cool to see him as a leader and just know that that's who he is as a character. But it was so, I felt so bad for him that he wasn't able to finish that out. This week, you're going to head to Atlanta with Jonathan Taylor and Tyler Biadasz to go to the College Football Award Show. It was also released this week that Jonathan Taylor is not one of the Heisman finalists. How do we react to that? How do we feel about that?
My initial takeaway was, I mean, obviously disappointment for Jonathan. As I've had the great fortune to attend the Heisman ceremony, it's awesome. It is the pinnacle of college football, and it's just an extremely outstanding experience for the guys that get to go. So I have the disappointment that Jonathan's not going to get to experience that. I also, my takeaway from the voting and how everything panned out is, not surprised. I mean, we built a Heisman Trophy campaign for Jonathan Taylor around the idea of the Heisman has become a quarterback award, and we need to stop undervaluing what running backs do for the game and what their contributions are. And the voting played out sort of that same way again. Quarterbacks, three of the four finals were quarterbacks. Was excited to see a defensive player get a shot to go to New York. I think that's
Chase Young.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome development.
I'd be curious to see if he was number five in the voting.
JT?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yep. I would think he would have been. I hope he would have been. I'd be also curious to see how close he was. Part of my thought on this is there's no set number of people that the Heisman has to bring or can bring. They could bring three. They could bring six.
They do it based on the voting.
Mm-hmm. Sort of, right? But there's no threshold of like, no, okay, if you get 20%, you get to come.
It's all year to year and where the gaps fall.
So I'm very curious to see how close he was, because sort of in my opinion is, give these kids this experience. Why bring four when you could bring five? Why bring five when you could bring six? I know you have to cut it off somewhere. You're not going to bring 13 guys. But that frustrates me a little bit.
I got into a Twitter exchange about this, and I am not give out participation trophies. That is not my general disposition on things, but I do think it would be good for college football if you just set the number at five, and we know that the players that are deemed the five best in college football are going to get to go every year.
Why would you only bring three when you could bring five?
Right, exactly. And I'm not just saying that because I think Jonathan Taylor might have finished fifth, and oh man, he could have been that fifth guy, because I don't know that.
I'd feel this way if we find out he finished sixth.
Right, but I think it's something to look at, that if we're talking about exposing the great players in the game and giving them that opportunity for America to see them up close and to give them the opportunity to go and be part of the Heisman ceremony, I don't see any issue with just sticking the number at five every year to allow both those things to happen.
And there is a label of Heisman Trophy finalist that you'll carry for the rest of your life if you are. And so Monty Ball, Heisman Trophy finalist, like that will be that is part of his title. So when he's introduced at a football game 20 years from now and they bring him back, they could, Heisman Trophy finalist, Monty Ball. So he won't have that. So that's a legacy thing. Now that Wisconsin has made the Rose Bowl, he's got another legacy, he being Jonathan Taylor, and all of his teammates have another legacy opportunity in front of him. The chance to become Rose Bowl champions. That's sacred, hallowed ground around here.
Jack Cohn even mentioned that right after the announcement was made for the bowl, that you see the reunions. You see the last year, the 93 Rose Bowl champion team right. comes back and has a 25-year reunion. This year, you saw the 98 and 99 teams that won back-to-back Rose Bowls come back and have a reunion and be honored in the stadium. Like, the Rose Bowl has a place of reverence here. It does a lot of places.
It's the facade in Camp right. Randall Stadium. We don't put the Orange Bowls and the Cotton Bowls on there. We put the Rose Bowls on there, even though they're New Year's
Six
Bowls. And
I have thoughts about that. But the Rose Bowl does carry a reverence that other games don't. And it's not just here. I mean, it is the granddaddy of them all. It is the original bowl game. It is, and I've been fortunate to be there three times. I'm looking forward to going a fourth. It is one of a kind. It is a special place. It is a special game. It is a special experience.
When they brought that team back for the 20-year reunion, very few people called them the back-to-back Big Ten champion exactly. reunion. Correct. It's the Rose Bowl reunion. Right. That's just the way it's framed. So you've been there three times?
Yes.
So I've been there only once. They went twice when I was in school here as a student, and I didn't go either time. One time I had hernia surgery. We don't need to talk about that. The other one, I don't know. Okay. I regretted it every day until I finally got a chance to go when the football team went back in 2013. I was on that Stanford trip. I regretted it so much because I had friends that went, and it's a bucket list thing. And I was,
yes, if it's not so on your bucket list,
I didn't know when Wisconsin would ever get back. What's your favorite story from all your trips to the
Rose Bowl? Well, I would say if you are, to piggyback on what you just said, if you're a Wisconsin fan and it's not on your bucket list, it should be, because it is a tremendous experience. My favorite story, I don't know if I have a singular favorite story, but one of my favorite parts of playing in the Rose Bowl is team photo day. I mean, this is where you talk about the legacy. This is where you take the photo outside of the stadium.
Yeah, it's iconic.
The Rose Bowl yep. facade there right behind you. I mean, it's a big part of the experience. But it's cool to see the team react when the In-N-Out Burger truck rolls up, because that is how they feed you on team photo day. And this truck comes up, and they're cooking the fresh burgers right there.
Oh,
and
you can eat double cheeseburgers.
And guys are going nuts for that. And it is very good. But I don't know, for me, that's one of those little things that I just think of when I think of going to the Rose Bowl. It's hearing California love on the practice field. It's going to Disneyland. It's
the parade.
It's seeing the parade.
I haven't been to that, but it's part of the deal
yeah,
for fans.
And it's amazing.
Pep rallies are awesome.
Yeah.
Santa Monica Pier pep rally in 2010.
30,000 people there. It was unreal.
Pep rallies at LA Live, like outside the Staples Center. That's a cool area. It's a really fun week.
It should be on your bucket list if it's not. Get out there.
In-N-Out Burger or Culver's? Should we have that debate? I'm Culver's. Okay. I'm team Culver's all the way.
Definitely. But I will say this falls under one of those things that, can something be overrated and still be good? Yes. In-N-Out Burger is good.
Sure.
Is it overrated? Yes.
Okay.
I would be team Culver's as well.
In this instance, the committee agreed with him, and that's why Wisconsin stayed ahead of Penn State. I was happy to see that. Now they face an Oregon team, a rematch from the 2002 Rose Bowl, which
2012.
Was 2012. Yeah, right. A fabulous game. That was
tremendous.
That was
one of the best football games.
Disappointing
we've seen.
Ending.
Yeah.
Controversial, another controversial ending against a Pac-12 opponent.
Russell Wilson just needed a couple more seconds.
We brings up Arizona State memories. I don't want to talk about it.
Whoa. Let's focus here.
So let's talk about this year's matchup against Oregon. This is a different Oregon-style team than we saw in 2012.
It is different. If you're thinking of the chrome helmets and the, you know, playing spread fast as you can go, up-tempo team that the Wisconsin faced back then, it's different. I think there's a lot of similarities to Wisconsin in how this Oregon team was built.
Sure.
It's built
good O-line.
Yeah, built from the front. It's built
good defense.
O-line, defensive line is where this thing started. And so there'll be some really interesting battles in the trenches in this game. Justin Herbert is a first-round pick. He's thrown for 10,000 yards. I don't want him to break Marcus Mariota's school record for passing, because that means he's thrown for a lot of yards against Wisconsin, but he's close to getting him. He's thrown for 95 touchdowns. He's a pro.
So get yourself out to Pasadena if you have the chance, if you have it in your means. It's so worth it. If you need tickets, the public sale for tickets began on Tuesday at noon. Here are three links you need to have in your favorites if you're interested in planning a trip. UWBowlCentral.com. That's where you're going to get all the updates on how you can get tickets, what the Wisconsin schedule is, how you find out where the pep rallies are, the fan events, the team events, things like that. UWAlumni.com is another one. That's where they have a bunch of travel packages where you can basically travel like the team. You can stay at the team hotel, and they have all sorts of different airfare included, tickets included, or airfare out, all sorts of packages. The last one is TournamentOfRoses.com. That's the Rose Bowl's website, and that's got all the details on the parade and how to go see the floats behind the before the parade, like how they're making them. Also, there's a Rose Bowl bash that's new since Wisconsin was in it. That's a free party in downtown LA. Check out those three websites if you're interested in going, and check it off your bucket list.
Okay, so Patrick, while we were in Indianapolis, the men's basketball team got right in a big way against Indiana. So trending topic number two, Hoops is back on the right track with an 84-64 win over the Hoosiers. I think you got to see more of the game than I did.
Yeah,
What were your takeaways?
Well, I was hosting the pep rally in Indianapolis, and they put it on the giant screen. So we had, you know,
so you were watching
a thousand
TV.
People. I was watching on TV on these giant screens. And it was great because the people at the pep rally were entertained with it, and it was such a fun game, and Wisconsin played so well. So there was a great energy, and people were cheering, and there was a live band on stage playing, and people were much more interested in the basketball game and the way they played. So Wisconsin got right. We've seen them play well at home, so this was another example of playing well at home. They need to figure out how to do that when they wear red jerseys, as Greg Gard said. So they'll get that chance Wednesday night at Rutgers. It's a very winnable game where you could open 2-0 in Big Ten play. Again, they did it last year, and it really set themselves up for a great Big Ten season. If you can get to 2-0 in Big Ten and then sit on that for 3 weeks when you go back to non-con play, get Micah Potter back. This is the last game that he won't play in. You could feel really good about where this team is at, even though you've had some stumbles and lost some games that you probably should not have lost or feel like you shouldn't have lost. So, but it was good to see the ball go through the hoop.
The shooting touch was back.
So We've belabored this point that I believe this team can shoot, and they clearly can shoot at home. They need to be able to shoot on the road. But to that end, in the three games that they had just lost recently, they scored 52, 50, and 54 points during that three-game losing streak. They had 47 at the half, and they put up 84, almost 1.4 points per possession, which is, that's Holy Grail-type territory if you're putting up almost 1.4. Maybe we just need to play Indiana every game.
Yeah. Why can't the Hoosiers win in the Kohl Center? That's amazing.
It's one of the most remarkable streaks. Maybe it's one of the most remarkable streaks in Wisconsin sports history of any sport.
They haven't won there since 98.
The first year the Kohl Center opened. 18 straight losses.
It's unbelievable.
And it's
hard to do.
And it's not just at the Kohl Center. Wisconsin's won, I think, like 20 of the last 23 now against Indiana in either building. Whatever it is, Wisconsin has Indiana's number, and I love it.
Well, it looked like vintage Wisconsin basketball in this one. You got to the line, cashed in, didn't turn the ball over.
Only four turnovers. Yeah. That's trending in the right direction. That has to.
So it's a classic recipe for Wisconsin to win that game. But but Kobe King, how about his performance? Career high 24 points.
Aggressive from the start, and he was scoring at different levels. Slashing to the rim, pull-up jumpers, hitting from outside, getting to the free throw line. That's the Kobe King that we know where his ceiling can be, that he can be that guy. And he had basically hit his career high by halftime, and he really set the tone for being that way, and it opened up everything else for other guys, that they were getting that inside-outside passing to get three-point looks with 10 toes at the rim. That's what the coaching staff always preaches, that's much a higher percentage shot when it comes from the post. And it allowed Reavers to have some flexibility in what he did, and he put up 20.
Eight for 12 from the field for him. That was good to see.
I said weeks ago that Reavers, Ford, and King were the three guys that if they can get productivity out of at least two of those three in every game, this team can be dangerous. And so that game, you had all three of them playing really well because Ford was in double figures also. And so we have to remind ourselves that Kobe King is only a sophomore. I think it feels like
he's been here a long time.
Because he came in with a class with Davison and Reavers. He is a junior by school, but he missed that year with a knee injury that set him back quite a bit. Last year, he wasn't full self. So he's for a sophomore to be doing this, like that, it excites me. So they go to Rutgers now on Wednesday, and then they dive back into Big Ten play or back into non-conference play. Let's hope they can get to 2-0 in the conference. Trending topic number three and our conversation with Kelly Sheffield after this.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Trending topic number three, Wisconsin volleyball in the Sweet 16 for the seventh consecutive season. They are the number 4 overall seed, which means they get to host up to 2 more games in this. They will play Texas A&M on Friday, who is the number 13 seed in the tournament. Difficult matchup. And if they can somehow get past that one, it looks like they would play, if the seeds hold, number 5 Nebraska on Saturday at the Fieldhouse. That place will be on fire.
And they use that advantage over in the first two games. I mean, they swept Illinois State and then swept UCLA. And the Badgers got a fairly tough draw. This isn't like the men's basketball tournament where all 68 teams are seeded. So Wisconsin gets the top 4 national seed, gets to host. But then how those brackets are built doesn't necessarily fall down to seed lines. So you get a pretty tough draw in UCLA for your second round match. And they were able to sweep the Bruins and are playing at a really high level going into the regional, which, like you said, this is the seventh year in a row they're playing in the regional weekend.
We talked last week. We gave Kelly Sheffield credit that the 5 years before he got here, Wisconsin didn't make the tournament. Now he's been here 7 years and made the Sweet 16 every single time. It's really impressive. And his first year, they got over the hump, but they got to the semifinals, the national semifinals, even beat Texas, got to the national championship game.
And then 2016, the last time they hosted the regional here in Madison, Lauren Carlini's senior year, felt like it was a team that was on its way back to that national championship match, perhaps, or at least the Final Four, and stumbled at home in the regional final against a very good Stanford team that I'm pretty sure went on to win the national title that year.
It did, yeah. So this is a really focused team, and you'll hear it in Kelly's voice that this team is, we ask them about their slogan. They've got a slogan that that is, they're focused on this. And one thing he brings up in the interview is how rare it is for a first time school to win a national championship. And they've
that
got
was interesting.
He'll tell you the stats, but it doesn't happen often. The same teams win the national championship in volleyball every year, and Wisconsin's really trying to break that ceiling. And
one of those teams is Nebraska, the team that, if like you said, if seeds hold, you're more than likely going to have to try to get through to get to the Final Four.
And Wisconsin swept them twice this year. So they talk about how hard it is to beat a team 3 times in one season. Wisconsin's going to have to do that. But so far, they've played six sets against the Huskers and won all 6.
And you get to do it in Madison. That's awesome.
So Friday at 1 p.m., you have our permission to take a half day of work and come watch Wisconsin at the Fieldhouse against Texas A&M on Friday. That game, if you can't make it there, it's on ESPNU, which is awesome. Karch Karai is going to be in the house calling the game, an Olympic legend. And then if they win that one, even if they don't, there will be a game on Saturday, but hopefully it's the Badgers against Nebraska on Saturday. That game would be at 5 p.m., also on ESPNU. Get to the Fieldhouse. Volleyball action there is awesome, and it's going to be up for grabs this weekend. All session tickets sold out on Monday in like a matter of moments. That's how popular that ticket is.
Shouldn't come as a shock.
Right. Not only because Wisconsin's fan base is terrific, but Nebraska's got a big fan base.
The Huskers will travel for
Hawaii,
sure.
We're expecting a lot of Hawaii fans to come. That's who Nebraska plays in the second game on Friday.
3 of the attendance leaders in the country every year are Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Hawaii.
But you can still get tickets. Single session tickets go on sale Friday morning at 8:30. Set a reminder because they aren't going to last long. You better be in that virtual queue right at 8:30. Let's hear from the architect of this number 4 overall seed volleyball team in his 7th year, making his 7th straight Sweet 16 appearance, head coach Kelly Sheffield. Coach, we're excited to have you. You are the first non-football or basketball guest we've had on this podcast, and we thought nobody better than to talk about women's volleyball because you guys are the hottest thing going right now. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's been an incredible season. Mm-hmm. We want to expose you and your sport and your team to a wider audience that may follow Wisconsin volleyball. We've got a pretty good listenership that maybe focuses most of their time on football and basketball. So let's start there. Let's start by maybe giving people an idea what this season has been like for you guys that, hey, if they're just following the mm-hmm. team now, I'm sure you'd welcome them to the bandwagon. They're late. We'll say that. They're late. But narrate why this season has been so special so far.
You know, I think we started the year with, you know, top 10 program. It's a team that has been kind of together the past few years. A lot of juniors on our team, a few seniors that are sprinkling in that are getting playing time. But a lot of these guys were getting playing time their freshman year. And so it's been a, you know, and it was kind of a rough freshman year, I think, for Wisconsin volleyball standards. Although I think it was still a Sweet 16 deal that
year.
Yeah,
the standards are pretty high.
Yeah, standards are pretty high. But you know, they took their lumps and have kind of grown. And I think there was kind of a maturity and a confidence about this team that, you know, it feels like, hey, this is the team that we can really make a nice run. We were knocking on the Final Four door a year ago and lost in the regional finals. And so, yeah, it's like you said, bandwagon, we'll take as many fans as we can get here.
So how important was it for you guys to get that top four seed to be able to host the regional here in Madison?
And what does that mean for folks who don't understand the way that works?
Yeah. In our sport, it's the top 16 seeds get a host the opening weekend. The top four seeds get a host the first two weekends. So the opening weekend and the regionals. And we were the fourth seed, so that means the first four matches, if we're still playing, get to be played in the field house, and then you're heading off to the Final Four. So, you know, what it means, it's big this weekend. Obviously, you've got top-notch competition coming in here, and we're not having to go to somebody else's court, or we're not having to go to a neutral site. We'll play in front of a full house in the field house, packed. It'll be loud. It'll be Badger fans all over the place, and it's pretty cool.
All session tickets sold out in 20 minutes for this weekend.
Oh, did it?
20 minutes.
That's cool.
What type of advantage does the field house give you? I mean, you've seen all venues all across the country that other teams have. Everything, I've never seen a road volleyball match. All I know is what we have, and it's awesome.
Yeah, this is one of the best places in the country. You know, Nebraska will be here, and I'm sure they ate up a lot of those tickets as well. They travel as well as anybody in our sport, and, you know, they're getting 8,000. They've sold out, I don't know, every match for 10 plus years, and we're getting 7,000. Hawaii is the top three fan bases that'll all be here this weekend, and Hawaii, I think they were averaging probably 8,000 fans. Wow. Opening weekend as well, and it'll be shocking of how many people come over from the island to watch this weekend. It'll be cool.
So are you expecting epic things? Because we've heard that thrown around with your team, this idea of do epic things. What's
things
the background?
Isn't quite the word.
What's the background? What's the background?
We hear
that.
But this is a family show.
Show here. Where did that come from? What does that mean to you?
You know, we have a meeting going into a season, and you know, the day before, we'll have our team meeting. We'll go over kind of our standards and procedures, how we're going to go about things, how we're going to, you know, what our standards and policies and rules are and all those things. And, you know, I think we ended that of just, you know, hey, or, you know, have big dreams, have big goals, you know, whatever that is. If it's a Big Ten championship, that's great. If it's a Final Four, national championship, whatever it is. But our attention has got to be focused in on the day-to-day things. You know, that's how you get to that point. And, you know, we ended the meeting by talking about, hey, there's only been 10 teams in our sport that have ever won a national championship. And what we've been knocking on the door, there's nobody that's better positioned to knock through that exclusive club. There hasn't been anybody that's won their first national championship in our sport in about 15 years. Wow. And we're knocking on the door, and let's go make history. Let's go do epic things. just that part of it wasn't even really kind of planned in the moment, but it was something that the group grabbed onto, and you never know what players or teams are going to grab onto and make it kind of their own. And that was the last thing that we talked about, was something that they just grabbed onto it and said, hey, let's do it.
So it was your words, but they've made it theirs. Sounds
absolutely
like.
Yeah,
I've heard you reference Sydney Hilly a lot.
Yeah,
in different phrasing, how mm-hmm. valuable she is. What in how can you alliterate how valuable she is to this team, and what makes her that way?
She's our compass, you know.
That's the word I've heard you say.
Yeah. She gets this group heading in the right direction. She's mindful of everything. She is a student of the game. She is everything matters to her. I'm sure I remember the first B she ever got in her life, and that was a really, really tough tough moment for her. She, you know, that was failure to her. You know, I went and celebrated him when I got a B. hey, let's go to the bars. Hey, this is great. I got a B. She was devastated. And, you know, it's her attention to detail and she's always heading in the right direction. Everything matters. And so, you know, even something of she studies of how different players on our team learn and how do they respond, what's their personality styles like, how to best communicate to them during times of stress. And, you know, she studies that. She's got that stuff memorized of every player. And so she, in those moments, she can bring out the best in different people.
So why were you guys able to rally after – it wasn't exactly smooth sailing early in the season. You know, you lost, I think it was four matches. Mm-hmm. How? Why were you able to rally from that? And now – because it's been nothing but uphill since then.
Well, number one, we're playing against really elite teams at the time. I mean, it wasn't like we were losing to Cupcakes or anything. I mean, these are – you know, we lose to Baylor, who's the number one team in the country. We lose to Marquette that was a top 10 or 15 team all year. Washington, who's still in the Sweet 16 right now. You know, and it's – you know, the Baylor, we didn't have, you know, Madison Duello in the lineup, pretty important player for us. And against Baylor, Marquette, it's – we had four swings to sweep them, and we ended up losing the match. And so, you know, I think our approach was, you know, this is a long season. Let's just keep learning. Let's keep get better. We scheduled, you know, it's been the number one or number two toughest schedule in the country. You know, we planned that for a reason, to learn about ourselves, to try to, you know, at no point was our goal to sit there and say, let's be undefeated on the season or let's go undefeated during the pre-conference portion. Shoot, you can schedule wins. You know, if it's just being undefeated is the important thing, then you schedule teams that's almost guarantee that. We wanted as tough as competition as we could possibly have. And so we can learn, so we can get back and watch some film and get in the practice gym and kind of go. And so the only way that you go 4-4, which was certainly a disappointment for everybody to win in a Big Ten championship, is if you are having that bigger picture mindset and you're sitting there going, hey, let's just, all right, we see what we did poorly or what the other team was exposing. You go in, you have a growth mindset in the practice gym and you tackle some things. It's, you know, after our pre-conference, we're sitting there 4-4 and we're talking to the team and right before our next practice, and I said, we're heading to the Big Ten. And I said, all right, guys, it's a new season. We're 0-0 and we've got to get better. I said, guess what? I'd be saying the exact same thing if we were 8-0 or if we were 0-8.
Sure.
And we're 4-4. It doesn't matter. It starts over, and we've got to get better. And let's put our energy and focus into that.
It would be unfair to talk volleyball at Wisconsin without talking about Dana Redke. Mm-hmm. So I hope fans can appreciate greatness, right? We talk about Jonathan Taylor. He gets a ton of attention. Frank Kaminsky got a ton of attention, National Player of the Year. She is every bit, for what she does, as important to the school and important to her sport and as good as those individuals are. What is she like?
She's as elite of an athlete as there is in the country, male or female, in any sport. it is that. You know, she is a 6'8", very, very agile, very, you know, gets up and drives and hits off of 1 foot equally as well as 2 feet. She's been in the backcourt defending, throw her body all over the floor and is a competitor. You know, the thing about her, she just started playing the game at 15 or 16, you know, and here she was starting.
How tall was she at age 15?
She was pretty tall. I'll tell you a story about her. When she committed here, and I remember she was going, I don't know, must have been her junior or senior year, and she comes in for a visit and walks in the field house, and I see her dad first, and he shakes my hand.
He's
and
like 7'4", I assume.
He's a big guy. And he looks at her and says, hey, oh, by the way, you got something to tell Kelly, don't you? And she goes, oh, yeah, and her face lit up, and she goes, I just grew another inch. You know, she went from 6'7" to 6'8", and she, very, very excited. And I said, how tall would you like to be? She goes, I think 7 foot would be pretty cool. And here's what is amazing about that is, you know, you're seeing how different women, tall women, are carrying themselves. You know, when I was in high school, you'd have some, you know, female at 6'1", and those people were considered really, really tall at the time.
Sure. Yeah.
None of them wore heels. It was all flats. They all slouched, you know, shoulders were down and everything else. Now you've got, you know, somebody like Dana and who wants to be even taller, you know, walking around in heels and standing tall, big smile, big personality, not trying to hide over there in the corner. And just the confidence that she carries herself with. It's not just her, but you're seeing a, you know, female athletes are growing. They're becoming more comfortable in their bodies and things. And I think, you know, people like Serena Williams and stuff like that have been really, really huge for the generations that have kind of followed. And I think Dana's really, really is great for other girls who might not look the same as everybody else in their school, but stands out, stands proud, has confidence, and plays at a really, really high level.
That's a great point.
You talk about becoming a role model. Was Lauren Carlini and what she did here, was she sort of a role model for Dana coming in? Do I remember that that sort of factored into what Dana was thinking in terms of coming here? Was that part of it?
Yeah, Lauren was a role model to me. It's, you know, I think for about everybody. It's, you know, certainly, you know, Sydney, that was a really big. Lauren, you're not used to seeing a female at this age carry herself and as confident as what she did. And that is something that we talk with our, you know, our players about quite a bit, is I want them to be the most confident people on the planet. I think you have guys when they come across, and it's not arrogant, it's just confidence, and people really, they like that, you know. But all of a sudden when females get up there and they're holding themselves to, you know, a lot of confidence, a lot of self-confidence, you kind of stand back a little bit. You know, I heard from people all the time, man, I bet Coach Carlini was really difficult. And I said, no, it's one of the easiest people I've ever coached. I mean, I had to be on top of my game because, you know, people that are that into it, you've got to, you know, you can't have a day off because they'll get you. But she was so bought in and wanted to be great. She just wanted to soak up as much as she could. The confidence isn't arrogant. It's just self-belief. And I think you want all of your players to be able to do that. You know, Tiffany Clark is sitting in there in a press conference after our match the other day and is saying, you know, telling the press conference, we're the best serving team in the country. And I had somebody ask me about that. And I said, why did that surprise you? You'd hear a guy say that and that you wouldn't bat an eye.
Sure.
You know, hey, we're the best rushing team in the country. Oh, okay. Yeah, you are. But a female says that and all of a sudden people are like, oh, you probably shouldn't say that. Man, I loved that she got up there and had that kind of confidence.
Someone told me long ago, there's a difference between arrogance and knowledge of self-worth. Mm-hmm. And then they're two different things. And mm-hmm. it sounds like, I mean, you're describing self-worth.
I mean, mm-hmm. of all the great athletes we've had here that we've had the chance to be around, Lauren had as much of a presence when she walked into a room
sure.
as mm-hmm. anybody. I mm-hmm. mean, it was not an arrogance, but it was I'm not surprised that there's excellence here. Mm-hmm. She was not surprised by success.
No.
She expected it.
So your players can't have that if you don't have that, because mm-hmm. you'll set the tone for that. So mm-hmm. I assume that you've got ultra confidence too. And where does that start from? Because your journey into coaching volleyball is maybe not laced with confidence, right? You had mm-hmm. to start, you had to earn everything that you've ever gotten in this sport.
Yeah, I've never played the game in my life. I've never been in a single match ever. Never had somebody hitting balls at me, you know, any of those types of
when
things.
When you do, wait, time out. When you guys practice, do you get in the drills, or that's what your assistant coaches are for?
Well, I mean, I can stand on the floor and
you
hit
can,
a ball.
You can bump and set a little bit.
No, that's something totally different. That's totally different. You know, basketball coaches might throw a chest pass to somebody, you know, but it's different from getting out there and shooting threes or whatever. That's a no, I've never played and. But I can run a drill, and
so why did you? How did you get into it then? Because that's a fascinating story to me.
The area that I was from Muncie, Indiana, 70,000 people in there, but it was really, really elite volleyball at the time, and still is. It's you know, the school I went to, Muncie Burris High School, 750 students there, kindergarten through 12th grade. It's a laboratory school right up against Ball State University, and they had won, my goodness, I don't know how many state championships, how many national championships. They probably won 5 or 6 national championships and the high school only has 250 kids. Steve Shondell is the head coach there, and it built just this powerhouse, and happened to be a school that I went to. There's a club called Muncie Anna Volleyball Club that is that is in that that's right there in Muncie as well. It's one of the top clubs in the country. Very, very, very good coaches have come out of there. It's my sophomore year in college, I was a runner in high school and was a junior high cross country coach for our school. And
while you were in college, you were doing that?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so I had a high school friend of mine. She went to college and her freshman year tore her elbow. And this was right before Tommy John surgery was a thing. So at the time, your career was done. Her career was done. She came back. She was the junior varsity coach. She called me up one night and asked if I saw her boyfriend out the night before with somebody else. And I had not. And we got talking about, you know, coaching. You know, I was coaching, she was coaching, some other people that we graduated with about a year and a half earlier were all into coaching. And we got to talking, and right before the conversation's done, I said, hey, if you ever need help, let me know. And I don't know why I said that. I think I was flirting with her. And the next day she gives me a call and says, hey, were you serious about what you said? And I said, I don't know what I say. And she said, about helping me out. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? She said, all right, we got practice at 3:00. So I showed up there and we had our first match the next day. I had no idea what in the world I was doing or anything else. And that was, 1989. And here I am, head coach of Wisconsin.
So if you weren't coaching, do you think you would have gone into teaching? Like, was that, cause you, I think you fancy yourself a teacher as much as a coach. A lot of our coaches here at Wisconsin do. Would that have been your career path?
I don't know. I could have been a bartender. It's
also noble.
Yeah. At the time, there was no epic plan. You know, there wasn't any of that. It was, you know, I was just a dumb college student just having a good old time. And, you know, it's also noble. Yeah, there was no plan whatsoever. But, you know, all of a sudden I couldn't get enough of it. You know, I was around really, really good coaches and educators, teachers, people that, you know, there was progressions to what they were doing. There was learning that was going. There was a curiosity of trying to get better at your craft. There was a lot of people that were passionate about it. So we'd get around and talk the game. And, you know, and what I didn't know at the time, but standing back, is I was given an Ivy League education in this profession. Mm. I was around, you know, the people I was around at the time, the current head coach of Purdue, the assistant coach of Purdue, the head coach of Kentucky, just all of these people that were, you know, assistant coach at Yale, all these guys were coming up at the same time. And I was the one guy who didn't play, but all these people, you know, Ball State men's program was a top four, you know, they were a Final Four team at the time. And you had all of this really, really kind of good stuff going. And I got lucky with my timing and it just ignited my passion. And
Why women's instead of men's?
Well, there's 300 and I had no plan on going into college coaching. I mean, there's way more women's volleyball than there is men's, you know,
sure.
For Division I level, you've got 340, same number of volleyball teams as there are, men's basketball teams out there. And, but men's volleyball is, there's just not a lot of it out there. And, you know, I'd been coaching, you know, junior high and high school and club, you know, anywhere from 13-year-olds to 18-year-olds, and doing every camp and clinic in the country I could do. I mean, I got to the point where if there was a summer camp at a college, I'm going and doing it. And I remember one year being at Bowling Green and doing a camp, and it was probably like my third year doing that. And the head coach had been there for a long time. She was a Ball State grad, and she was at the time, she was the president of the American Volleyball Coaches Association. And she looked at me one time, and she goes, what are you doing? I go, what do you mean, what am I doing? She goes, what are you doing with your life?
You know, whoa.
Boy, that's tough when somebody tells you this, man.
That's a question you don't want to hear.
I said, I don't know. This is great. I thought I had the greatest life in the world, you know, at the time. I was coaching volleyball. I was bartending. I was, you know, occasionally going to class. And she said, you know, what if you're really good at what you do? What if I got you, you know, what do you think about coaching in college if I got you a job in college? And that was like asking somebody if they wanted to go to the moon. I mean, I had zero thought into that. I'd never thought about that. I was just, you know, you're living day to day, and I just thought I had the greatest life ever. And And so she calls up somebody who is the head coach, Bill Walton was his name. She said, "You know Bill Walton?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, he's a great basketball player." She goes, "No, not that Bill Walton." She goes, "Bill Walton's the head coach of Houston, and he was an assistant coach for the Atlanta Olympics and, you know, one of the top coaches. And why don't you go down there? And he wants to interview you." And so I go down there, and I work a camp for a week. And apparently he calls Denise and said, "You know, there's no way in the world I'm hiring this guy." And she calls me and said, "What'd you do?" And I said, "I don't know. I was trying to play it straight." And so she calls him back and said, "You're going to hire Kelly." And he said, Bill says, "No, I'm not." And she goes, "You know," and Denise is like 5'2", you know, and "Bill, you will hire him." And so I get a phone call from him. This is 1997, and says, "Oh, hey, I don't want to hire you, but Denise is making me. We start season tomorrow." And I packed up my car, and in 2 hours, I was on the road and drove from Muncie 20 hours straight to Houston. Got there in time for the second practice of the first day, and here we are.
How much were you making that first year?
$12,000.
See, that's what I mean. You've that's a fascinating story, and you've earned everything. Like, so that a confidence idea is cool to hear.
So then, was that the best life you could live? I mean, you talked about what you were doing before that, being like, "This is the coolest thing I could imagine." Was having a real paying job at a college program? Was that the? I mean, were you just somebody who appreciated every step along the way?
$12,000. If they would have said you can come here and coach college, but it'll cost you $12,000 to do it, I have no idea how I would have come up with the $12,000, but I would have scrapped for it. The idea that I was getting money to coach college, and I'm walking in this gym, and the level of play, and this was a team, it was top 25, top 30-ish, somewhere around 25 to 35 type of team. I couldn't believe it. And then we're traveling and the things that we're doing, and you're going over to, you're at Tulane, and I remember sitting there and the old Conference USA, and which Conference USA at the time was all over the place. Yeah. And I'm sitting there at Tulane.
The USA, yeah.
We're in the middle of a match, and I'm smelling my clothes. It's like, beer. Oh, I smell beer. It's right behind me are some fans that are drinking beer.
It's New Orleans.
You have that in football games, but at the time you didn't have that in volleyball matches. And it was just, that blew my mind as somebody who's coaching club in high school. There's somebody sitting behind me watching a college game, drinking a beer. It's just the coolest thing ever. Yeah. The life was amazing.
So has anyone had to twist your arm to hire any of the assistants you have now? Cause you've had basically since you've been here, pretty consistent staff continuity. I assume there was no declaration made that, hey, you got to hire these people. These were people that you wanted to bring on your staff.
I don't hire skill. I hire people that character traits. And because I feel like I can teach them what we're wanting them to do. And so Brittany,
is that a reflection of your experience that you sort of had to learn
the same path
coming up?
Probably, but I also don't want somebody to, I'm just not going to turn something over to somebody else and just say, here, this is all yours. You do whatever that you're wanting to do. And they've got to kind of learn the way that we're kind of doing. And, but I also want to learn a little bit from them. But Brittany was she played at Purdue. She was a 4-year volleyball player. In the last 2 years of her career, she played basketball on teams that were, Final Four, Elite Eight types of teams. And I knew the coaching staff there. They had a lot of great things to say about her. And she came, was our second assistant at Dayton. Didn't know anything about the profession, but really, really wanted to be really good. And Gary was a club coach in Virginia. And I went to a club practice, watched a kid. And I think he was an assistant coach on a 16-under team. And I just really liked how he communicated with the kids. And after practice, he came over and introduced himself. And I said, "Hey, I'm, just really impressed with the job that you did. I thought, I love how you teach." And I said, "You want to come over and work our summer camps?" He's like, "Yeah, that was great." And came into camps and did a really good job. And I said, "Hey, you ever thought about coaching college?" And he goes, "Well, not really. It's I'm an engineer. I'm making engineering money." And, and so then I saw him.
So I'll give you $12,000.
Yeah. So he comes up at the, I see him at the Final Four. He walks up and says, I've been really putting a lot of thought into this, and volleyball is my passion. I think I want to do that. And what do you recommend?" And I said, I said, you can do one of two things. So, you know, I've seen you coach, and you've worked our camp, and, you know, I could probably get you a job at a small school, maybe second assistant at a small school, or you could be a volunteer at a bigger program. He said, well, what would you do? And I said, well, money's never been a big thing for me. It money hasn't really mattered. I hope my bosses aren't listening to this podcast. Yeah. And
they don't, otherwise we'd have been fired long ago.
I said, for me, it was all about learning. I wanted to surround myself with people that were really, really good at what they do and learn from them. And so for me, my choice would be go to be a volunteer to program or something. He said, all right. And I said, so happens we now have an opening volunteer. And so he said, yeah. And so he came over.
Was this at Dayton?
Dayton, yeah. So he's a volunteer. His, you know, for 1 year, after the end of that year, he says, I'm learning so much and having so much fun, I'm going to do it again, which is kind of insane, you know. So he's a volunteer. He moved halfway across the country. He's a volunteer for 2 years in a row. Then I get the Wisconsin job. I bring Jess with us, who's our director of volleyball operations, and Brittany. And I interview a few other people. I interviewed an assistant coach at UCLA, an assistant coach in a Big Ten, and somebody that I'd known for 20 years. And after interviewing all three of them, I said, man, none of those three are as good as Gary. So I, you know, Gary just accepted the job at Dayton, called him up, and I said, here, come on over to Wisconsin. He said, I can't. I just accepted the Dayton job. I said, brother, this is a big moment for you, man. Think again. And, you know, so, yeah, they came and, you know, but everybody that's kind of here we're a pretty close bunch. It's more than just working relationships. We're close friends.
All right, let's get to know Kelly Sheffield a little bit away from volleyball.
Yeah.
You like to travel. Give me a favorite places internationally maybe that you have traveled to.
You know, we just took the team over to Europe this for a couple weeks. Italy was fantastic. My wife and I went there a couple years ago.
No, I want the three month 21-year-old Kelly Sheffield.
Oh, you want that one.
Backpacking.
You want the immature.
Like a gypsy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a gypsy here. All right. So yeah, you guys have done your homework here. I'm 22. My brother is 21. Celebrates his 21. I went and did some roofing in Florida for the summer to get some money. Yeah, it is unbelievable. Holy cow. It's you're doing tile roofs up there in Florida heat and you're earning your money. And we did that to go and backpack Europe, which we did for 3 months. And so we decided to take this cheap flight that you don't really know. You've got a 3-day window and of when you can fly. So they say, you know, go to New York City, and then within these 3 days, you'll get on a plane, and they will drop you off somewhere in Europe. And basically, you're just – I don't think they do this
it's
anymore.
It's like a mystery flight.
Yeah.
Like a parachute? Like, yeah. Here you go. Yeah.
And so we get this call. It said, all right, you got to be at the airport tomorrow, and you're going to Stuttgart. And it's like, Stuttgart? What is Stuttgart? And it's in Germany, apparently. And so we land in Stuttgart, and, you know, our German was a little rough at the time. They didn't teach that to us in Muncie. And so we get dropped off, and we're standing there probably for about an hour and a half just in the airport looking around going, all right, now what do we do? We had no idea. You know, we see these buses, but they're not in English. And so finally we took a chance. We got on a bus. It ends up dropping us off in town. And these guys come up to us, other people that I guess were backpacking or whatever, and said, oh, you're here for Oktoberfest. We're like, yes, we are. Like, all right, let's go. We're going to Munich as well. So we go to Munich, and that was the start of it. We go to Munich, and then we end up going to Amsterdam. So my brother and I are bouncing around for a little bit for a month, and then we separated. I wanted to go. I think we were at Poland at the time, and I wanted to go to Paris, and he wanted to go down to Austria or something. So we're like, all right, see you later. He went one way, I went another way, and a month later we met back up, and it was just 3 months of backpacking. It was amazing, you know. But going into that, you know, I've always been a newspaper reader, but it was always the sports page. And after that 3 months, it became what I looked at first in the mornings was the front page, you know, that it became, it got me out of my bubble a lot bigger way. You're meeting a lot of different people and having amazing conversations. And I think looking back, and certainly in this profession that I'm in right now, I think there's been a lot of benefit to that trip.
Okay, so now you got a couple kids, you're married, and life's a little different. Yeah. Where do you want to go now? Like, where's the place that's on your travel bucket list yet you haven't been?
I'd like to go to Tokyo this coming summer and see some Badgers in the Olympics. I think that would be that'd be a pretty cool trip.
Maybe Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh would be, I've been there before.
Yeah, maybe next Pittsburgh week. Weather next weekend is supposed to be pretty nice.
Pittsburgh this time of year is unbelievable.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Will you be going to the JoJo Siwa concert with your children? Is that on the bucket list? You have daughters, and I don't even know what a JoJo Siwa is.
We're confused, but...
Yeah, you just ruined their Christmas presents, so I appreciate that.
There's no way they're listening to this.
Guarantee that.
We're not big with the under 10 demographic.
The Reagan, I call her Sugar Ray, is a huge JoJo Siwa fan. She's a singer, pop singer for little kids, and so...
This is on your playlist, I assume, too, right? 70s music and JoJo Siwa?
I've got no JoJo.
What do you listen to? I hear you've got some eclectic taste.
The only thing I know about JoJo is the Beatles sang about JoJo. 70s, 80s, it's a lot of Motown, a lot of R&B, some old rock. You don't really get good rock songs anymore. All of our rock gods are about ready to pass. They're all 70s and 80s and things, but 70s was an amazing decade for music.
Does the team have much of an appreciation for your musical and movie taste?
Doesn't matter. they're going to get it regardless. We listen to music at every practice. It's my playlist. Now that they can suggest some songs that go on there, and we'll take advisement to it. It's got to be language appropriate, so that brings it down to about 10% of what they present to me. And one of the things about that is, you know, you'll hear from former players and from years ago, and they'll say, "Man, I heard a song that we heard back in the practice gym, and it took me right back. It took me right back to being there and the feelings I had and with the team and all those things." And, you know, if you're listening to their current music right now, that could take you back to all kinds of stuff, you know. But, you know, you listen to, you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire, September, you know, that's going to bring them right back to right now, you know, us trying to knock on the door of trying to get to a Final Four and all of those motions. And I think that's pretty cool.
For the uneducated, can you give us a 30-second preview of Texas A&M, who you'll face Friday night?
Yeah, they're awfully good. It's Holland Hands is an outside hitter. Probably got the nastiest serve that we'll see all year. Big time All American outside attacker. She's awfully good. They've got a setter that attacks more than about any setter that we've seen, so that will stress us out quite a bit. They finished, second or third in the SEC, you know, the 13th seed, 12th seed in the tournament. And so, you get to this part of it, you're going to get some pretty good competition on the other side of the net.
If you can get past them, you get either Hawaii or Nebraska. We know a little bit about Nebraska, so we don't have to educate folks there. That if that should present itself, it'd be pretty awesome on Saturday. But regardless, good luck Friday. Congratulations already on a great season, and I hope you get that trip to Pittsburgh.
Amen. Badger fans, hey, you guys have been fantastic. We really, really, truly appreciate your support. We don't take that for granted at all. Bandwagon will accept a few more of you. And, let's go do some epic things this week.
Kelly Sheffield, cool guy.
Just like, a fascinating story.
Yeah.
How he ended up here.
I didn't know a lot about his history and what he is off the court. That was awesome for me. I was like, I'm learning a lot in this. So find your way to the field house this weekend to support Kelly and Wisconsin's volleyball team. Let's push them through onto Pittsburgh, onto that national semifinal. It's going to be a big weekend at the field house. Remember, single session tickets go on sale Friday at 8:30 a.m. Set a reminder. Don't let Nebraska get any of those single session tickets.
Also, tickets for Pasadena are on sale to watch the Badgers play in the Rose Bowl. Check that off your bucket list. I'm making a lot of demands here. But these are things that shouldn't have to twist your arm.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to twist your arm for either of these two things, because this is as good as it gets for Wisconsin fans. Brian, you and I will be there in Pasadena. Badger fans, we hope to see you there too.
Unless we get fired.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.